welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Erin. The first article on the front page, flu shots more vital than ever before. Steps to mitigate COVID-19 also could slow seasonal flu, by Michaela Ram. Influenza season is expected to begin in earnest in the coming weeks as winter starts to take hold, leaving healthcare officials nationwide fearful that the seasonal virus could exacerbate the ongoing pandemic. Quote, "It's more important this year than ever before to get a flu shot because of COVID-19, said Stephanie Cooper, and a nurse in Mercy Medical Center's Director of Employee Health and Clinic Operations. We don't want to have both of those viruses at the same time, and we know we can prevent the flu with the vaccine," end quote. Eastern Iowa healthcare systems have ramped up their vaccination campaigns this year, starting the sooner individuals can get a flu shot, the better. These vaccine administrations began in earnest just last month, so Cedar Rapids hospital officials say it's too soon to say whether compliance rates are better or worse than before. University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics pharmacists report they've administered almost 5,000 vaccines so far this year. "A very good start," said Robert Linnell, physician assistant and lead provider for UI Quick Care. But the flu season may have another factor working against the spread this year. Local providers are optimistic the measure meant to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus may also keep this year's flu season from overwhelming corridor hospitals in the midst of the pandemic. Officials at both Cedar Rapids hospitals reported that a late season surge of influenza cases came about the same time earlier this year as the first case of COVID-19 were first appearing in eastern Iowa, alarming local health care providers who worried about fighting two viruses instead of one. However, as the state locked down and quarantine measures were put in place in March, those flu cases dwindled. Quote, "As soon as we shut down the hospitals and started wearing masks and social distancing, the flu epidemic evaporated. In 2 weeks, that spike was gone," end quote, said Dr. Cleet Younger, a family medicine physician with Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids. "That means if Iowans and other Americans continue practicing social distancing, wearing face coverings, and other practices commonly referred throughout the pandemic, this year's flu season, quote, may be milder this year," end quote, said Dr. Jorge Salinas, infectious disease specialist at UIHC. Quote, "If we try to continue our lives without using face coverings, social distancing, and hand hygiene, it could be very problematic," he said. "We could have to wait two epidemics at once. That, rest assured, could be very problematic for our health system," end quote. Lower rate worldwide. U.S. public health experts typically look to the southern hemisphere to predict the season. In studying the flu strain affecting that part of the world, experts found that countries have done well at controlling COVID-19, also saw a minimal increase in flu cases, Salinas said during a September 3rd virtual news conference. According to a late August report from the World Health Organization, flu activity worldwide was at lower levels than expected for this time of year. In some areas, quote, "very few influenza detections were reported," end quote. The World Health Organization report states that certain factors with the ongoing pandemic, such as the closure of health clinics, may have influenced this data, but it also notes steps to reduce transmission of COVID-19, quote, "have likely played a role in reducing influenza virus transmissions," end quote. Being cautious. Still, the concern that COVID-19 and the flu, both contagious respiratory illnesses, could overwhelm local healthcare systems is prevalent. Typically, flu cases seen an increase after individuals travel for the holidays to see family across the country, Younger said. But it's hard to predict that might happen when the holidays come this November and December. There are key differences in symptoms between the two viruses, and COVID-19 presents a greater risk for complications. Still, since they both are respiratory viruses, influenza and the novel coronavirus can present with similar symptoms, such as fever, cough, and a runny nose. Quote, "if patients have any symptoms, and definitely any flu-like symptoms, they need to get an appointment with their primary care provider," Linnell said. "If you have these symptoms, it's better to be cautious and be evaluated," end quote. Our next front page article, universities stress over area bar reopenings, campuses in no rush to increase face-to-face classes, by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. Iowa City. The University of Iowa has moved a far larger share of its classes online amid the COVID-19 pandemic than Iowa State University or the University of Northern Iowa, according to reports Thursday to the Board of Regents, but none of them are in a hurry to resume in-person learning. While the governor this week lifted her emergency health order closing bars around UNI, the closure remained in effect around the ISU and UI campuses until Sunday unless revised before then. Quote, the bar closure in our county has been a tremendous help to us, end quote, UI Vice President for Student Life Sarah Hansen told Regents. Quote, our numbers have absolutely plummeted since that time. We haven't had triple-digit student cases on a daily basis since September 4th, end quote. Governor Kim Reynolds on August 27th ordered nightclubs, breweries, and bars in six counties, including Johnson, Story, and Blackhawk, to close until Sunday. Restaurants in those communities, home to the three public universities, also had to stop serving alcohol after 10 p.m. This week, she amended her order to lift the closures early in all but Johnson and Story counties, meaning bars in UNI's Blackhawk County are back open. Where new COVID-19 cases in Johnson County reached a daily high of 338 on August 26th, just 2 days after the start of the UI fall semester and after students were seen crammed in bars without masks, new daily cases have dropped into the 30s and 20s in the last week. Quote, we are down into the 20 cases a day at this point, Hansen said. Just to really be frank, I am worried about September 20th, which is when that mandate from the governor is set to expire, end quote. Student regent Zach Least, enrolled at ISU, conceded some of his peers arrived for this fall semester, quote, in not the right mindset. But I think now it's kind of clear what we need to do, he said, agreeing. I am a little concerned about September 20th. That date is a little concerning to me, and I sure hope from our actions, though, that it won't be anything like it was to start the year, end quote. Hansen said among the issues that hurt the UI, which has reported more than 1,800 COVID cases on campus since August 18th, was the number of students who arrived with the virus. Quote, I think one of the challenges for us was students arriving on campus positive, but not necessarily even waiting for their test results at home, she said. So we had some students that tested at home and then showed up and then said, oh, hey, I'm positive, and we had to kind of track that down, end quote. The high rate of infection paired with hundreds of students and instructor requests to either learn or teach entirely online has pushed the UI percentage of virtual courses to 78%, according to presidential reports to the board Thursday. UNI and ISU online only course rates are lower, with ISU reporting 34% of classes are fully online and UNI reporting just 16% are entirely online. In response to Regent David Barker's question of when the campus might be able to move toward more in-person learning, all three said they're in no hurry. UNI President Mark Nook said his campus has space constraints. Quote, moving to more in-person instruction is going to be difficult, Nook said. We need to continue the physical distancing, and having the classrooms to do that is what really limits that, end quote. ISU's Vice President for Student Affairs, Toya Younger, said she, too, is encouraged by dropping daily COVID-19 cases reports on campus and in the Ames community. Quote, we don't want to jump into anything that would ultimately lead to a mass spread, end quote, she said. UI President Bruce Harold said space isn't necessarily an issue at the UI, but testing is. Quote, I'm not comfortable that we have the testing capacity and the regents specifically to allow us to a large enough percentage of our population, Harold said. We need to get an infection rate of under 5%, and right now, last I checked, I think the county was at 12.6%, so we've got a long way to go, end quote. Rapid daily tests would be ideal, according to Harold. Quote, if you can do the entire population every day, so we do 40,000 tests every day, that's where we need to get to, he said. It's not like once a week, we need to do this rapidly. This country is way under testing, end quote. Absent that capacity, Harold said the risk is too great to push for more in-person learning. Quote, there's so many unknowns that with this virus that I don't know why we would run the risk of rushing back to face-to-face, to be honest with you, he said. We'd much rather let everybody choose their level of comfort, end quote. UI students, faculty, and staff have called on the campus to move entirely virtual, and administrators have rejected those requests, saying many still want in-person learning and that much is happening virtually already. Harold's comments Thursday, though, seemed to support the contention that many feel more comfortable learning at a distance. Quote, while we talk a lot about of students would prefer to have face-to-face, I'm not sure we have good data to support that at all, he said, noting he teaches a class in a room with the capacity for 68. It's currently configured for 30 and far fewer than that attend in person. Quote, students can pick where they want to be for that class, end quote, he said. Quote, and so far in our fourth week, the most I've had physically in class has been 5 out of 30. 25 have preferred to stay wherever they are, end quote. And our last front page article, Iowa City may get medical marijuana outlet. State could choose either other sites if firm backs out, by Aaron Jordan. A state-licensed medical marijuana dispensary may open in Iowa City, which would be the first in the corridor. The Iowa Department of Public Health announced Thursday it plans to award two new medical marijuana dispensary licenses, one to the Iowa Cannabis Company East in Iowa City and one to the Cannabis Patient Network in Council Bluffs. The firms have until today to accept. Otherwise, the state could choose among five other applications, including two for Cedar Rapids and two others for the Iowa City area that met the state's minimum criteria. The new license follows the March closures of dispensaries in Davenport and Council Bluffs. The state still has licensed dispensaries in Waterloo, Sioux City, and Windsor Heights. Iowa law allows only five dispensary licenses. There have been other setbacks this year for medical marijuana entrepreneurs in Iowa. Iowa Relief, a medical marijuana manufacturer in Cedar Rapids, closed earlier this year and turned in its license. It was one of two manufacturers licensed in Iowa to produce the medical marijuana products sold to qualifying patients at the dispensaries. The other is MedFarm Iowa of Des Moines. Iowa Relief, owned by New Jersey-based Acreage Holdings, produced capsules, topical ointments, and tinctures for the state's medical cannabidiol program for less than a year. Companies interested in Iowa's medical marijuana program have said it won't take off until lawmakers allow higher levels of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the compound that produces the high feeling. Last summer, the Iowa legislature passed and Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law House File 2589, which removed a 3% THC limit on products but replaced it with a limit of 4.5 grams of THC per 90-day purchase with some exceptions. A year earlier, Reynolds vetoed a bill that would have lifted the cap and allowed 25 grams of THC in 90 days. The new law also added for 2020 post-traumatic stress disorder and severe autism as conditions qualifying for medical marijuana. Moving to the Iowa Today page, IC manager recommends El Paso officer for police chief. Iowa native and UI graduate Liston draws praise for his leadership skills, by Lee Hermiston of the Gazette, Iowa City. An officer who once interned with the Iowa City Police Department could soon lead it. In a letter to the Iowa City Council and Civil Service Commission, Iowa City manager Geoff Fruin is recommending the city hire Lieutenant Dustin Liston, currently with the El Paso, Texas Police Department, to lead the department through what will likely be a period of change. Quote, throughout the selection process, Mr. Liston exhibited a strong understanding of the type of leader we need here in Iowa City, end quote, Fruin wrote in a letter to the Iowa City Council and the Civil Service Commission. Quote, he understands that his role will be to lead this department as it accelerates its path toward a more robust community policing model, one that acknowledges the importance of equity and incorporates new approaches to long-term issues, end quote. Whoever is selected as Iowa City's next police chief will be asked to lead the department through a period of change. The Iowa City Council, responding to demands from Black Lives Matter movement protesters, has vowed to restructure the department. Quote, he is prepared to strengthen existing relationships and build new ones in a meaningful manner that will create new and collaborative community problem-solving efforts, end quote, Fruin wrote. Quote, Mr. Liston values transparency and will be a solid partner to the Community Police Review Board, Human Rights Commission, and other boards and commissions that are eager to work together to bridge gaps between community and police in a positive, respectful manner, end quote. Liston, an Eldora native, who was one of 18 applicants for the chief job following the retirement of former Chief Jody Matherly in February. Fruin renowned that list to nine, who were interviewed by a 15-member committee, including representatives from the police department, Iowa City Pride, the NAACP, the Community Police Review Board, and the ACLU Hawkeye chapter. Fruin selected three finalists, Liston, Commander Jason Lindo of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, and Olwen Police Chief Jeremy Logan to visit Iowa City last month. In his letter, Fruin touted Liston's ability to collaborate with a diverse population in a college town. El Paso is home to more than 680,000 residents, more than 80% of whom identify as Hispanic. It is also home to the University of Texas, El Paso, which has more than 25,000 students. Liston graduated from the University of Iowa with degrees in psychology and sociology. Quote, I am ready to work for the community, and I think that's the most important thing we can do in today's society, end quote, Liston said during a meet and greet in August. Quote, a lot of people feel they no longer have a voice in what law enforcement does, and without legitimacy, we cannot do our job, end quote. Fruin also touted the, quote, leadership and communication skills, end quote, Liston showed during the August 3rd, 2019 shooting at a Walmart in El Paso, where 23 people were killed. Fruin's selection is subject to approval from the Civil Service Commission, which next meets September 24th, and the Iowa City Council. Fruin is asking that Liston be appointed of affected January 11th, Chief Matherly earned $166,213 at the time of his retirement. Our next article, voluntary separations, past layoffs included in Raytheon's job cuts. Collins Aerospace grapples with drop in commercial air traffic by John Stepp. The more than 15,000 job cuts Raytheon Technologies announced Wednesdays included Collins Aerospace employees who already left during the coronavirus, a Collins Aerospace spokeswoman told the Gazette on Thursday. With commercial air traffic decreasing sharply during the pandemic, Collins Aerospace saw a 125% decrease in its second quarter operating profit that came with myriad cost-cutting measures. Collins Aerospace, Cedar Rapids' largest employer, laid off 72 Iowa employees earlier in September, according to a WARN notice filed with Iowa Workforce Development. The Avonics company has about 10,000 employees in Cedar Rapids, Coralville, Decorah, Bellevue, and Manchester. The company also unveiled furloughs for hourly employees and temporary pay cuts for salaried employees in April. Employees also have taken, quote, voluntary separation agreements, end quote, Collins Aerospace President Stephanie Tim said in a July email to employees obtained by the Gazette. A hiring freeze also has been in effect, according to Tim's email, along with cuts in discretionary spending. Raytheon's Technologies Chief Executive Officer Greg Hayes announced the 15,000 number in analyst call Wednesday. He specifically mentioned Collins Aerospace and Pratt and Whitney for the cuts. While it's unclear how many total job cuts Collins Aerospace will see, Hayes said Raytheon Technologies is seeking a 12% cut in Collins Aerospace costs. Raytheon Technologies was formed through a $135 billion merger finalized in April between Raytheon Company and United Technologies. In 2018, United Technologies bought then Rockwell Collins for $30 billion. The next article, Task Force Set to Address Issues of Equity in Marion, by Gage Miskmian of the Gazette, Marion. The task force intended to address racial equity issues in Marion is set to begin work. The Community Equity Task Force was approved Thursday by the Marion City Council. Members will be City Manager Lon Plokaham, Police Chief Mike Kitzmiller, Mayor Nick Abu-Asley, Councilmember Colette Atkins, Civil Rights Staff Liaison Amal Etler, Civil Rights Commission members Kent Jacobson and Frederick Brown, and Marion Alliance for Racial Equity members Circo Stembo and Janessa Carr. At-large members will be appointed soon, Abu-Asley said. The task force stems from recommendations made by the Marion Alliance to the City Council in July. Among the recommendations are to stop racial profiling and traffic stops, to establish a citizens' police review board, and to make city departments more respectful, welcoming, and diverse. During the Marion Alliance's presentation to the council, Sophia Joseph, a co-founder of the alliance, said racial profiling is the number one concern in Marion. Though 2.5% of Marion's population is black, 16% of the police use of force incidents have involved black people, she said. Abu-Asley told the Gazette the task force will look at the city policies and practices using data and recommend any needed policy changes. As an immigrant, Abu-Asley said he is sensitive to issues surrounding racial equity and hopes to find solutions to any issues in Marion. Quote, you want all people to be able to live in a community where they feel accepted and without fear, end quote, he said. The next article, Benton student dies when her van collides with school bus, by Grace Keene, Van Horn. A Benton Community High School student died Wednesday after the van she was driving collided with a school bus. The Iowa State Patrol said Mackenzie Cavam, 16, of Bella Plain, was driving a 2004 Dodge Grand Caravan van north on Benton County Road, V-44, just north of Highway 30, when the van dropped off the shoulder multiple times. The driver overcorrected the crossed path of the southbound Benton Community School bus around 7:30 a.m. The bus collided with the van's driver's side door. Cavam died at the scene. Five students on the bus were treated for minor injuries. Their names were not released. The school bus driver, Allison Hicks, 51, of Garinger, was uninjured. Garrison was uninjured. Benton County Community Superintendent Pamela Ewell said in a statement the district mourns, quote, the significant loss the student's family and our school community are experiencing, end quote. And we have a correction here, wrong description, quote, it's time to hold our leaders accountable, end quote. An opinion column Wednesday by Lies Lens wrongly linked Cedar Rapids Mayor Brad Hart to a KCRG TV9 report focusing on the August 10th Durejo response by Linn County Management. Coordinator Steve O'Kinnick Hart was not mentioned in the KCRG story. And now for the top stories page. Who benefits when college football returns without fans? Bar restaurant owners hope televised games begin bearing in customers, by Lee Hermiston, Iowa City. The return of Hawkeye football, even without fans in the stands, should be a boom to some businesses, especially those serving food. The Big Ten on Wednesday announced the return of football beginning October 23rd to 24th with an 8-week schedule and a weekend of seeded divisional matchups. 9 games, but without selling tickets. While Iowa City and Coralville's hard hit hotel motel industry won't be seeing fans filling their rooms on weekends this fall, other industries are likely to benefit from the Big Ten decision, according to Josh Schamenberger, president of Think Iowa City, formerly known as the Iowa City Coralville Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Quote, I think it moves the needle for certainly the restaurants and bars, he said. Whether or not we're going to be in an environment where that that can be encouraged remains to be seen because we're obviously still dealing with COVID, end quote. But with the games on television, Schammenberger said he can envision fans returning to their favorite bars and restaurants to load up on nachos, wings, and other appetizers and watch the game on the big screen. Restaurateurs he's spoken with are happy about the plans to bring back football, Schammenberger said. Past studies have shown the economic impact of a Hawkeye football season exceeds $120 million in the Iowa City-Coralville area. The home games mean thousands of visitors patronize hotels, restaurants, and bars, retailers, transportation companies, and other businesses. Many of those industries, Schammenberger said, had been bracing for a season without football, which would be devastating to their bottom line. Throughout the pandemic, economic development groups, think Iowa City, the Downtown District, the Iowa City Area Development Group, and the Iowa City Area Business Partnership, have come up with ideas to spur support of local business. Schammenberger said he hopes the return of football will lead to more of those opportunities. Quote, "We'll get all of our creative teams together and find new and creative ways to keep those businesses going forward the best we can," he said, end quote. Our next article, Iowa Trump Biden voters agree small businesses need virus aid, by James Q. Lynch, Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Iowa supporters of President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden agree on the need for Congress to provide more assistance to help small businesses weather the coronavirus pandemic. A September 8th through 10th poll of 500 likely Iowa voters found 95% of Biden enthusiasts and 94% of Trump backers agreed it's important for Congress to implement a small business agenda to keep businesses opened and Iowans employed. Quote, "Iowans have made it clear they need additional government support, without which we risk losing these businesses and, over time, communities," end quote, a Goldman Sachs spokesman said about the survey results. The poll was conducted by David Binder Research for Goldman Sachs' 10,000 Small Businesses Voices, an initiative to help small business owners advocate for policy changes that help them, their employees, and their communities. The pandemic has decimated small businesses, which employ nearly half of all Americans, according to the Census Bureau. Many stayed afloat in the early stages of business shutdowns by drawing down cash reserves. George Washington University economics professor Steve Hamilton said, by July, more than 400,000 small businesses had to close, and he warned that small business closures could be 50% higher than the peak of the Great Recession. However, prospects for another round of COVID-19 relief, including assistance for small businesses, are not great. Quote, "next to nil," end quote, was Senator Chuck Grassley's assessment of the likelihood of more relief being approved before Congress adjourns for the election. Binder found broad recognition among voters, 88% of Biden voters and 90% of Trump voters, of the importance of small businesses to the economy. The poll also found that 77% think the small business community is overlooked by Congress, and 61% said those businesses have not received enough pandemic assistance. And 73% said without that assistance, the pandemic will result in big businesses having an even larger advantage over small businesses. In the last article on this page, with Big Ten reversal, Trump aims to score big in battleground states, by Amir Mandimi of the Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump was quick to spike the ball in celebration when the Big Ten announced the return of fall football at colleges clustered in some of the Midwest battleground states critical to his reelection effort, declaring, quote, "I'm the one who got football back," end quote. But his efforts to reverse last month's decision to postpone fall sports in the conference because of the novel coronavirus were far from the only factor that led officials to change course. The Big Ten, one of the power conferences that drives the big businesses of college sports, was under enormous pressure to restart the season from athletes, parents, coaches, and college towns that rely on football Saturdays to fill restaurants and hotels and provide much-needed tax revenue. For weeks, Trump allied himself with the effort. He publicly and privately prodded the conference to reverse its August 11th decision to play football next spring. When the conference announced Wednesday it would begin play October 23rd under strict coronavirus prevention protocols, Trump was eager to capitalize politically. Quote, I called the commissioner a couple of weeks ago and we started really putting a lot of pressure on, frankly, end quote, Trump said at a news conference. It is a moment that could help Trump on the margins in key states such as Pennsylvania, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, where schools are now scheduled to play their first games less than 2 weeks before Election Day, said Alex Conant, a Republican strategist. Quote, there are voters who voted for him in 2016 who don't want to vote for him this time, mostly because they don't like him personally, Conant said. Those voters need to be reminded why they supported him in the first place. It's issues like this where he takes a controversial position they agree with and delivers, end quote. The Big Ten reversal also syncs with Trump's efforts to suggest the United States is on the guild path to normalcy under his stewardship. The president had criticized Democrats who, quote, don't want football back for political reasons, end quote, and accused Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer of keeping Michigan and Michigan State off the field. Left unsaid is that the 14 schools in the Big Ten all have opted to scale back in-person learning and pleaded with students to stop parties and congregating in large groups as the U.S. death toll from the coronavirus nears 200,000. And while Trump repeatedly decried the Big Ten, until Wednesday, we had far less to say about the postponement of fall sports by the Pac-12, which includes university and Democratic-leaning California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and as well as Battleground Arizona. On Wednesday, the president called on the Pac-12 to get going and resume play. Big Ten officials cited improvement in same-day coronavirus testing capabilities as a key factor in their reversal. And now moving to the obituaries, John Philip Bruce, Cedar Rapids. John Phillips Bruce, 47, of Cedar Rapids, chose to end his life on Monday, September 14th, 2020. An hour visitation will be held on Tuesday, September 22nd, at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories at noon, followed by a private family service. As mandated by the proclamation, social distancing must be practiced, which requires a limited number of people to be allowed into the visitation at one time. The use of face masks or shields is required. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Survivors include his wife, Sarah Pauley, his parents, Carl and Martha Bruce of LaQuaire, Iowa, his father and mother-in-law, Don and Martha Pauley of Clear Lake, Iowa, his children, his brother, Carl Bruce Ivy of Kimashi, Iowa, his uncle, Ronald spouse Susan Bruce of North Liberty, Iowa, his aunt, Barbara Spickerman of New Liberty, Iowa, his sister-in-law, Teresa, spouse Hugh O'Brien of New Jersey, brother-in-law Jim, spouse Jennifer Pauley of Colorado, and nephews Brendan and James. He was preceded in death by his infant brother, Carl Bruce. John was born December 5th, 1972 in DeWitt, Iowa, the son of Carl and Martha McIntosh Bruce. He loved woodworking, baseball, soccer, and antique cars. John also had a great love of animals. He was a member of the Hakka Model, a club in Cedar Rapids. John was a very helpful person. Please leave a message for the family on our website, www.cedarmemorial.com, under obituaries. Memorials may be made to the Cedar Valley Humane Society in memory of John. Richard Vaughn, Cedar Rapids. Richard Vaughn, 68, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Wednesday, September 16th, 2020, at his residence. Services will be later date. Burial is in Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is caring for Richard and his family. Richard Allen Vaughn was born August 11th, 1952, the son of Kenneth and Margaret Ann Smith Vaughn. Richard proudly served his country in the U.S. Navy. He graduated from Iowa State University. Richard owned and operated Midwest Electronics in Cedar Rapids. He enjoyed going to the casino, gardening, and feeding the animals in his yard. He was preceded in death by his parents and brother, David Vaughn, in 2011. Left to cherish Richard's memory are his three siblings, Jack Jacqueline, spouse Andy Schmidt of Robbins, James, spouse Jan Fawn of Phoenix, Arizona, and Carol, spouse Sean Egan of Phoenix, Arizona, and several nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family has respectfully requested that any memorial contributions be made to the American Diabetes Association's. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Francis G. Seaton, Cedar Rapids. Francis G. Seaton, 96, of DeWitt, formerly of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away on Wednesday, September 16, 2020, at Genesis Medical Center in DeWitt, Iowa. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. Private family services will be held at the chapel with burial to follow at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. A live stream of the private family service can be viewed at client.tribucast.com/TCID/6472617 at 2:30 p.m. Monday, September 21st. As mandated by proclamation, social distancing must be practiced, which requires a limited number of people to be allowed into the visitation at one time. The use of face masks or shields is required. Francis was born December 26, 1923, in Mequota, Iowa, the daughter of Loyal and Opal Lockwood Easton. She graduated in 1941 from Wilton High School. Francis worked as a clerk for Penford. She was united in marriage to Delos Dud Seaton on December 22, 1967, in Rock Island, Illinois. Francis was a member of the American Businesswomen Club. Being with family and her circle of longtime friends was her greatest joy. Frances will be deeply missed by her family and everyone who knew her. She is survived by her children, Duane, spouse Rosemary Johnson of Marion, Iowa, and Kenny Johnson of Bettendorf, Iowa, stepson Richard Seaton of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 8 grandchildren, 3 sisters, Lucille Shuburn of Lost Nation, Iowa, Doris Anderson of Davenport, Iowa, and Camila Wolf of Des Moines, Iowa, and many loving great-grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and extended family members. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband Delos Dud Seaton, a sister Marjorie Ben, and 4 brothers-in-laws. A memorial fund has been established in Francie's name. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Beverly Ann Russell Newton. Beverly Ann Russell, 82, of Newton, passed away on Tuesday, September 15, 2020, at Hiawatha Care Center. A visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon Friday, September 18, at Wallace Family Funeral Home in Newton, Iowa. Beverly was born in Newton on February 11, 1938, to the parents of Chester and Louise Green. Beverly enjoyed going to the movies as a little girl and ordering chocolate cokes at Bigelow's Restaurant. She graduated from Newton's High School in 1956, where she was a Cardinals cheerleader. Outside of school, she waited tables at the feed bag. Beverly cherished her high school friends, jumping at the chance to attend at all of her high school reunions. During her senior year, Beverly asked Wayne Russell, 3 years her senior, to prom. The two were married a year later on June 16, 1957. Wayne was the love of Beverly's life. Wayne and Beverly raised their 4 daughters in Newton. They enjoyed spending time with the girls on trips to Clear Lake, camping, fishing, and watching their daughters participate in athletics. Wayne and Beverly partook in classic car shows and went on dates at Bain's Restaurant, dining on tenderloins and onion rings. It gives us comfort to know that Wayne and Beverly have been reunited in heaven, hand in hand. Beverly spent much of her career working in accounting at Iowa Southern Utilities and in procurement at Maytag. She received an Associate in Arts degree from Des Moines Area Community College in 2000. In her free time, Beverly made a commitment to traveling the world with her daughters and sisters. It was hard for Beverly to sit still. She achieved her goal of visiting all 50 states in her lifetime. Beverly adored her daughters and 9 grandchildren. She was a fixture at her grandchildren's softball games, recognizable in her visor and sunglasses. The doors to her home were always open. She hosted countless holiday gatherings, baking her special graham cracker pies. Beverly had a sweet tooth. A few slices of pie never hurt her. She was quick-witted, had an infectious laugh, and a bright personality, but nothing was brighter than her signature pink lipstick. After retirement, Beverly worked a seasonal job at the Maytag Dairy Farm over the holidays and spent many winters in Phoenix. Beverly was a member of First Lutheran Church in Newton. She was devout in her Christian faith and in her actions, always being present for those in need. Beverly is survived by her daughters Tammy, spouse Chuck Ryther of Marion, Iowa, Renda Russell of Avondale, Arizona, Don, spouse Todd Lucas of Newton, and Denise, spouse Jim McVeigh of Newton, sister Jane, spouse Warren DePrenger, 9 grandchildren, Brooke Kissinger, Brian Ryther, Chrisanne Ryther, Natalie Schaefer, Molly Juraska, Nicholas McVeigh, Elizabeth McVeigh, Francis Lucas, and Audrey Lucas, and 8 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Wayne, her parents, and brother, Richard Green. We would like to express our sincere appreciation to Dr. Ann Sonnen and the extraordinary staff at Hiawatha Care Center for the care provided to Beverly during this unprecedented time. Donations can be made in Beverly Russell's name to First Lutheran Church in Newton to aid in its release after the derecho storm. James Riley Mayer, Overland Park, Kansas. James Riley Mayer of Overland Park went peacefully into God's awaiting arms on Monday, September 14th, 2020, surrounded by his loving wife of 57 years, Rosemary, and their 7 children, Riley, Mara, spouse Paul Martin, Carrie, Christopher, spouse deceased, Amy, spouse Terry Sebas, Brian, spouse Kristen Creel, and Terry, spouse Katie Houlihan. Jim and Rose have been blessed with 16 grandchildren, Kathleen Fortino, spouse Anthony, Matthew, Margaret, and John Martin, George and John Sebas, William Mayer, Brady Maura, Jane, and Michael Mayer, and Rose, August, Danielle, Bridget, and Finn Mayer. Jim was born on November 28, 1937, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the youngest son of Francis and Jane Mayer. He was preceded in death by his 4 brothers, Dennis, Richard, John, and William. He is survived by his adored sister, Gloria Fagan of Cedar Rapids. A faith-filled family, Jim's love for our Lord began early in his childhood. Humbly presenting himself at Mass every day, Jim estimated he received communion over 22,000 times. He went to Immaculate Conception High School in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and earned a basketball scholarship to play at Creighton University. Jim would always say, quote, "Never be late for Mass or a basketball game," end quote. Jim and Rosemary met at a teaching school in Dallas, Texas in 1961. A career change brought them to Kansas in 1976. He founded Bankers and Investors, an investment firm in Kansas City, Missouri. In 1984, he ran for the United States Senate. In 2001, he sold his investment firm to a large bank and retired. He was a patriarch of many sports events, especially at St. Thomas Aquinas and CYO games for the Ascension's Cure of ARS, Nativity, and Holy Spirit. Throughout his life, Jim focused on one thing, growing in his love and devotion to our Lord. Jim made his life a daily expression of faith in God, kindness to others, devotion to his wife and family, compassion for the poor, and immense love for his country. Jim was often seen with his hands raised, saying, "Thanks be to God." Jim grew God's kingdom on earth by building up the hearts and spirits of others throughout a kind world, word, and encouraging comment, or his joyful smile. As he left us, he gave us these instructions: follow Christ, be kind to others, continue to learn, and take care of those in need. Quote, "Well done, my good and faithful servant, come and share your master's joy," end quote. The massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, September 18th at Church of the Ascension, 9510 West 127th Street, Overland Park, Kansas. A video and reflection time will begin at 9:30 a.m. Please join us under the tent in the parking lot immediately following Mass for coffee and donuts. The Mass will also be live streamed. He will be laid to rest at 2 p.m. Friday in St. Lawrence Cemetery in Easton, Kansas. Bonnie Lou Griffith, Cedar Rapids. Bonnie Lou Griffith, born November 21, 1928, in Remsen, Iowa, passed away peacefully on September 9, 2020, in Dallas, Texas, with her family by her side. A wonderful mother, sister, and wife, Bonnie's love for her family was the most important thing in her life. Bonnie married Edwin Clinton Griffin Jr. on October 24, 1947. Edwin passed away on October 2, 1987. Bonnie is survived by her three children, Scott Griffith of Coatesville, Pennsylvania, Craig Griffith of Wayne, Pennsylvania, and Susan Fitzgerald of Carlton, Texas. Bonnie has seven grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Bonnie was preceded in death by her mother, Lenore Kershoff, brother, Wayne Bud Kershoff, husband, Edwin Griffith Jr., and grandson, Stephen Griffith. We will love you and miss you forever. A private family celebration of Bonnie's full and beautiful life will be at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be left at cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. And in other notices, Coralville Joseph F. Joe Rowe, 74, died Wednesday, September 16, 2020, Gay and Siha Funeral and Cremation Services, Iowa City. Hedrick Gary Messerschmidt, 79, died Wednesday, September 16, 2020, Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Sigourney. Kenton Justin Hook, 77, died Thursday, September 17, 2020. Bohenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Manchester. Maquita Grace Degu, 87, died Wednesday, September 16, 2020. Carson Celebration of Life Chapter, Maquita. Sigourney Sharon Myers, 77, died September 15, 2020. Holm Funeral Home, Sigourney. And then we have an In Memory of Larry Kelshin, Sr., 2/23/1942 to 9/18/2004. Always missed, always loved, by Betsy and family. Moving to the sports section, get on the field, then stay there. Ferenc Barda, expand on the work that lies ahead, by Mark Morehouse. Yes, Big Ten football is back and on track for an October 23rd and 24th return. The COVID-19's pandemic isn't going anywhere, so you need to remember the colors and the numbers. The Big Ten developed a color-coded system to guide decisions on whether schools need to stop practices or games. Green means go. Your team has tested at less than 2% positivity rate. And orange means 2-5% COVID-19 positivity, and your team must proceed with caution. Teams in the red range, greater than 5%, must stop practice and competition for at least 7 days until the metrics improve. Beyond the team, the football community, coaches, support staff, employees who are around them also will be tested on an everyday basis. Greater than 7.5% for the team's community will shut things down. This is the football community only, not the University of Iowa, Iowa City population, or other sports. Quote, the 5% rolling average every 7 days is about what percentage tested positive during those 7 days, end quote. Iowa Athletics Director Gary Barda said during a Zoom video conference call Thursday, quote, now when someone tests positive, they go into a protocol that lasts longer than 7 days, so you accumulate the number of people who are in that potential positive count. That at any time has to be below 7.5%, if that makes any sense, end quote. It does, but yes, it takes some explaining. This is all going to take some explaining. The Big Ten is back, but it faces the same perils, delays, and shutdowns that have affected the other conferences. Nothing is guaranteed, and everyone knows that going in. Barda and Iowa head coach Kirk Ferentz talked Thursday about the Big Ten's decision to return to play and other items related to returning to the field in the safest manner possible. The football schedule isn't finished or not ready to be announced yet. Iowa knows it will play the six teams in the Big Ten West and then two crossovers. Purdue Athletics Director Mike Bobinski said Thursday the Big Ten will build this schedule off the one it had before the pandemic, eliminating one crossover game. The Hawkeyes likely will end up with the Penn State and Michigan State. quote, the final schedule isn't done yet, end quote, Barta said. Quote, we had another meeting this morning. They will be done very, very soon, working directly with our TV partners, Fox, BTN, and ESPN. Have all been great in trying to get the schedule together, end quote. The schedule should be ready within days. As an aside to this question, Barta said the UI did begin winterizing Kinnick Stadium that has halted, obviously. Iowa is scheduled to have 4 home games this fall. Since the Big Ten announced a return, one big question has been about opt-outs, players who don't want to expose themselves to COVID-19 and choose to not play. The Big Ten has been hit with a few headliners and opt-outs, including Penn State linebacker Micaiah Parsons and Purdue wide receiver Rondale Moore. Iowa hasn't had any players opt out publicly, but it could still happen. Quote, we have a very small number of expressed concerns, but no final announcements at this point, Ferenc said. If we do get verification, we'll announce it when it's appropriate, end quote. The return of Big Ten football doesn't mean the 4 sports that Iowa cut in response to the budget shortfall will be reinstated. Barta has said, quote, never say never, end quote, but it looks like men's and women's swimming teams, men's and tennis and men's gymnastics have been permanently cut from the UI, taking the school from 24 sports to 20. Quote, the short answer is no, Barta said. I shared with our staff yesterday that the position eliminations, the 4 lows, the salary reductions, and including the 4 sports not continuing at Iowa are still in place. Those decisions won't change because the financial crisis is certainly still in play and this still is going to be very, very significant, end quote. Yes, there will be more TV money, but Barta said it will be a reduced amount. Also, a season with no fans in the stands, something the Big Ten firmly stated during Wednesday's announcement, means no ticket revenue, no seat donations revenue. The cost of the extra COVID-19 testing will also be a factor. Barta said the school might still need to borrow as much as $60 million to $75 million for operations. Ferenc has concerns about how much time players will have to get ready to, quote, endure the deliver, end quote, contact. This week, Ferenc spoke to the NFL colleague who reminded him of the rash and soft tissue injuries the NFL went through during the 2011 lockout. But he also realizes everyone is in the same boat. The Big Ten can now stay. It's at least in the boat. We have one community letter. Some trees can be saved. All of us are sad to see the many damaged trees having to be removed, but even worse than that is to see some cut down that could easily be trimmed and saved. Every day, some of us walk on the trail around Wright Elementary School on Hollywood Boulevard Northeast, and it has been disheartening to see so many trees being cut down that could have been saved. Today, I asked one of the workers who had authorized this action and was told that they were hired by the school board, and there were 3 more they were cutting down. Many of the ones already removed were only slightly damaged. I called and left a message at the school office on Edgewood Road, but of course it is too late to save many of them. Is there no way that a tree expert couldn't have marked ones that could not be saved? There were 4 or 5 that did have red X's on earlier, and we could understand they're being cut down. They were really badly damaged. But now the trees seem to just be removed with no thought of trimming to save them. Please be sure that when a company is hired to remove trees that there are some guidelines and not just massive destruction. Many of us have lived in this area for decades and know that the ones cut down at Wright School were over 50 to 100 years old and irreplaceable. That was by Coral Dye of Cedar Rapids. Okay, so for our political cartoon here, bear with me here, this may be a little difficult to explain, but so we have a big billboard that has a picture of Trump in it and something that he has said about the coronavirus. The billboard says, Trump on coronavirus, quote, nothing more could have been done, end quote. And then we have 2 guys at the bottom who I would say change the billboards from ad to ad. But one of them has sneezed and the other one says Gesundheit. And then we see a bunch of letters on the ground and the billboard now reads Trump on coronavirus, quote, nothing done, end quote. and I think I have time for little articles. Ernst Annual Motorcycle Ride Will Benefit Durejo Recovery by James Q. Lynch of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Senator Joni Ernst will replace her traditional roast and ride with motorcycle rides over 2 days in October to benefit charities, including Cedar Rapids Durejo Recovery. Joni's ride across Iowa will feature 6 stops, Sioux City, Carroll, and Des Moines on October 10th, and Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and Davenport on October 11th. Last year, more than 250 bikers rode with Ernst from Des Moines to her annual fundraiser near Boone, where more than 1,000 supporters were registered for the barbecue dinner and politics. Ernst, a combat veteran who was elected to state and county office before winning a seat in the U.S. Senate in 2014, is seeking re-election. She is being challenged by Democrat Teresa Greenfield. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, Ernst is foregoing the traditional pack ride of previous roasts and rides in favor of rides modeled off poker runs, where riders depart and arrive at the destinations at their own pace. Like her roast and ride events, the 2020 ride will be a fundraiser. Proceeds will go to the Puppy Jake Foundation, an Iowa-based nonprofit that provides veterans with professionally trained service dogs, and to the Greater Cedar Rapids Community Foundation's Durejo Disaster Recovery that provides direct relief to victims of the Hurricane Force August 10th storm. At each stop, there will be a short program that will include remarks from the foundation, Ernst, and other Republicans. Tickets will be $10 for riders. Riders must show a valid motorcycle license and sign a waiver. Same-day registration is permitted. Non-rider attendees are encouraged to make a free will donation. To purchase tickets, visit roastandride.com. The schedule is Day 1, Sioux City, Roasters Harley-Davidson, 8:30 a.m., Carroll Harley-Davidson of Carroll, noon, Des Moines, Big Barn, Harley-Davidson, 3 p.m. Day 2, Des Moines, Big Barn, Harley-Davidson, 9 a.m. Cedar Rapids, Metro, Can-Am, 1 p.m. Davenport, Scott County Victory Office, 3:35 p.m. All times are approximate. Marion City Council votes support for Mayor's Public Mask Advisory. Majority of members did not favor a mask mandate by Gage Miskman, Marion. The Marion City Council voted Thursday night to support a mayoral proclamation calling for a face mask advisory in Marion. The vote came after a discussion at Tuesday's work session where council members opposed a mask mandate. Mayors in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Des Moines, and 4 other Iowa cities have issued emergency proclamations mandating face coverings in public to curb the spread of the coronavirus. At a Linn County-wide meeting last week, representatives from Marion, Fairfax, Hiawatha, Eli Robbins and the county also opposed mask mandates, favoring instead mask advisories or recommendations. Marion Mayor Nick Abuasli said he sought the council's opinion on any mayoral proclamation. Quote, from what I understand, the majority of the council would support an advisory, a proclamation, and not a mandatory action, end quote, he said. City Council members Grant Harper said the proclamation amplifies the importance of mask wearing rather than enforcing it. Quote, we're going to be watching how the disease manifests itself going forward, Harper said. We're reserving the right at the future date to change things should the virus get better or worse, end quote. Abuasli said he intends to issue a proclamation using the advisory language. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Aaron. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thank you so much for listening and have a great day.